All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, August 6, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is 65 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York, and I'm going to warn you guys, I have been having nothing but technical issues this morning, so if stuff doesn't work, I'm not going to get stressed about it because this has been pretty difficult. It's been an hour of screwing around just to get stuff ready to do the show today. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, You're the Research Rat, RFK Jr. Blast Vaccines. And we took a long, hard look at some of the lies that we are being told. RFK Jr. came out, it was probably a week or two ago. Actually, I think it was about the beginning of June, right before they passed the mandatory meningitis vaccination law in New York State. And RFK Jr. had come out and warned about the collusion that is happening between Big Pharma. Hold on, play sound never. Okay. Between Big Pharma, the government, and the media, and I mean, we laid it out on the line and took a look at all the different lies. The head of the CDC then leaving and becoming the president of vaccines at Merck in 2009. It's a pretty dirty, dirty story. But I wanted to continue just a little bit further on this because Mr. Brandon Turville and I tend to think alike at times. And it was pretty awesome because I found a story that he posted this morning. MSM, mainstream media, to pro-vaxxers. Don't argue the facts, show scary pictures. And it just made me laugh because yesterday when we were looking at that 1976 swine flu expose that 60 Minutes had done, where they called the head of the CDC to the mat for the lies, where they did not tell the public about the damage that could be done, where it caused that Epstein-Barr syndrome. If you got the vaccination, I had pointed out that they used scary music. Dun, dun, dun. But yes, Brandon is correct. Scary music works or scary pictures. All right, let's read this because he has a pretty interesting take on all this. The vaccine industry, Big Pharma, and the mainstream media have some advice for vaccine zealots attempting to bully parents questioning the safety or effectiveness of vaccines into changing their minds. Don't argue the facts, just show scary pictures. And what can only be described as an instruction manual is how to shame, bully, and shout a person down who simply has a different take on the best and safest way to raise their children. It is clear that the religion of vaccines and quote-unquote scientism now has the hallmark of any faith determined to spread itself, the presence of evangelicals. The new vaccine evangelical movement is being provided with a script sheet of what to say and what to avoid when attempting to convert others to their belief system. And that's exactly what's happening. Like we talked about yesterday, the FDA and this absolute total bullshit where they're allowing studies to be published that have since been shown to be incorrect or need to be redacted, yet they're allowing these studies to continue to be out there where these anti-vaxxers then point to them and say, well, look, you people are wrong because this study shows that, XYZ vaccine cures all mice that it's been given to. Yes, but they're not showing you the big grapefruit-sized tumors or the autistic mice bumping into walls. No. Remember, Congress is now a club of millionaires and they all made their money on being able to insider trade. Anyway, the new vaccine evangelical movement is being provided with a script sheet of what to say and what to avoid when attempting to convert others to their belief system. Like most religions, the goal among the leaders and the zealots is a world where differing modes of thought no longer exist and where other opinions no longer force them to question the way they view that world. Articles like, quote, "How to Change an Anti-Vaxxer's Mind" by Jeffrey Kloger of Time are perfect examples of a recent propaganda blitz coming from the mainstream media. And that's exactly what RFK Jr. had said. Mainstream media is completely complicit in this, along with the lying doctors, the lying researchers, and the lying government entities who are all on the take. Kloger's article is being quickly copied and rewritten in mainstream media outlets across the country, with the real vitriol being found in the more trendy hipster markets. The recent propaganda push is being based upon a study by researchers. Oops, hold on 1 second. Everything is, I just can't even believe how messed up all my stuff is today. Oh, where did it go? Kloger's article is being quickly copied and rewritten in mainstream media outlets across the country, with the real vitriol being found in the most trendy hipster markets. A recent propaganda push is being based upon a study by researchers at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It's not certain exactly how much time and effort was put into the study to discover what most undergraduate marketing students and remotely successful politicians, salesmen, and sociopaths already know that scary pictures are more effective at convincing hordes of people of an idea, true or false, than facts, reasoning, or logic. Bingo, Brandon. That's exactly it. Scary pictures, real simplistic diagrams, those are the best ways to convince people who don't have an attention span of more than 8 seconds. In other words, the study and the mainstream media have determined that it is best to go after the emotional vulnerabilities of those who are either under-researched, on the fence, or have been subjected to bullying and social pressure since hipsters and the cool kids realized it was the in thing this year to attack anti-vaxxers. Consider the passage by Jeffrey Kloger of Time, who writes, quote, "That's a very noble goal. But it's also one of the things that makes it so bloody hard to change their minds on the topics of vaccines. Public service campaigns don't work either, nor do one-on-one explanations of why the rumors about a vaccine autism link are wrong. In some cases, there's even a backfire effect. The greater the effort expended to persuade anti-vaxxers, the more convinced that they become that they are right. So it is extremely good news that the researchers at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign may at last have come up with a way to cut through the misinformation and get the truth across. Just don't tell parents to vaccinate their children. Show them what happens when they don't. Da, da, da. So I'm going to give you scary music because I don't have scary pictures on the radio. Be afraid, be very afraid. Like I said yesterday, let's show them pictures of people bleeding out their eyes and their mouths and talk about Ebola and how measles ruined Johnny's Disney World vacation, and everyone's going to line their children right up to be injected with the newest experiment by Big Pharma. In other words, don't show them scary pictures, or don't argue with them, just show them scary pictures. The hope is to catch someone unaware in a weakened state or someone who is unfortunately not as well versed on the subject. And of course, if you can't convince someone by providing facts, logic, and reasoning, there is always the chance that this person is irrational. But there is also a very real chance that they are quite lucid and that you, in fact, armed with all your talking points, media-induced outrage, and perceived intellectual superiority, are simply wrong. Kloger does make an important point, though. Most quote-unquote anti-vaxxers are unconvinced when confronted with the typical pro-vaccine argument. Now, let's go back to that 1976 expose that we watched yesterday from 60 Minutes, calling the CDC chief to the mat, like I said, in regards to their lies of omission, in regards to the swine flu vaccine. They 100% knew that it caused neurological disorders, yet they allowed it to roll out and played their propaganda games, making people afraid of what would happen and telling them about how it would spread. And oh my God, Nana died because she got swine flu, so you better all line up and get it. Remember, this is not the first time that they have duped us. Remember that the vaccine program is part of the Department of Defense biowarfare program. Look it up. Go into the history. 1972, Nixon inked the agreement that stopped biowarfare, but the one thing that we maintained was a defensive posture utilizing what? Da-da-da-da, vaccines. We also discovered yesterday that a lot of these vaccine manufacturers, and I mean, we dug deep into the Ebola bullshit when it was going on last summer. A lot of these vaccine companies coming up with these newfangled technologies, flipping DNA switches on and off, are all funded by the Department of Defense, at least in their angel funding. Let's get back to the story. I gotta find it again. Man, this is hard today. Kloger does make an important point, though. Most anti-vaxxers are unconvinced when confronted with the typical pro-vaccine argument. But that is not because they are necessarily rigid of belief. It is mostly because the typical pro-vaccine argument tends to be baseless propaganda rooted in rhetoric instead of science. As for the social aspect, if anti-vaxxers didn't abandon their beliefs when the first few waves of obnoxious big pharma propaganda came blasting through the airwaves, they are generally not impressed when their friends, family, or even complete strangers take it upon themselves to give them a regurgitation of the talking points that they heard about vaccines on NPR, CNN, or Red and Time magazine. And that's exactly it. I mean, with the attention span being less than a goldfish, people in our educational system teaching children to just memorize and not process. People just regurgitate what they heard. There's no processing that happens in between. It goes from the ears out the mouth like diarrhea. Now, when it goes from the ears out the mouth, they are not digging into the background, the history, the who follow the money, who is going to make out on this? And that is something on this show and in my life. This is why I drive all my friends and family crazy, because I never take anything for somebody's word. I always have to prove it to myself before I'll regurgitate something. And it typically isn't regurgitation, as you know. All right, after all, social shaming and bullying is, if one's opinions are strong enough, tends to produce the opposite of the desired effect. And if anyone has ever been a smoker and had friends or family telling you had to quit smoking and then went into all the reasons and started showing you scary pictures, you know how much deeper you dig your feet in to tell them to go fuck off. Not smoking's good for you, but you're the principle of the idea that somebody has the balls to fucking tell you what to believe. At least that's how I see it. Back to the story. The idea of showing scary pictures, however, is not just a rudimentary effective propaganda method. It can also be quite dangerous, particularly when the scary pictures are being broadcast on every outlet in mainstream media. Take the spate of articles posted in the New York Times, for example, propaganda narratives like, quote, "My patient doesn't do vaccines," quote, "The dangers of vaccine denial," quote, "The discredited vaccine studies' continued impact on public health." They are all aimed at painting the science surrounding the numerous demonstrations of vaccine dangers as pseudoscience, and parents who question the safety of vaccines as delusional, obsessive Luddites. There we go, Luddites again. I say, rise to the Luddites. It's time to stand up and fight the machine, people. Because 1984 is becoming more than just a novel. It's here and it's gonna roll over you like a steamroller, baby. All right, back to the story. They are designed to produce a false consensus within society that vaccines are safe and effective. And basically, they are designed to create a self-fulfilling prophecy. If enough people read the propaganda and believe it, particularly if they think the majority of others believe it as well, the victim population will come to believe the propaganda. And like I said yesterday, when we were listening to that 1976 60 Minutes expose, when they were reading the propaganda campaign, and he was questioning the CDC chief as to all of the famous names that they had tossed out there in their campaign that had gone along with the swine flu vaccine, including Muhammad Ali. Remember, any time that we invoke some sort of celebrity, let's say, we are like 13-year-old impressionable schoolgirls, okay? It's called peer pressure. Does anyone remember peer pressure? The reason why you took your first drink? The reason why you smoked your first cigarette? The reason why you found your first boyfriend and you kissed him on the bus in the back seat? It's all called peer pressure, and it has a huge effect. And people, because they're not educated in regards to things, when they are faced with peer pressure, if they don't understand a matter from start to finish and the reasons why, and the reasons why they should have a conviction, they're very, very easily swayed. I'll tell you what, you can't sway me of shit if I've done research on it, and I will argue to the death, bloody death, if I've researched it myself and have convinced myself, and not by reading Ying Fu Ping's blog. I'm digging into not only science journals, but university journals, and I know we can't trust any of that shit. But when I start finding 12 or 15 different outlets, and not just from science, but from science, and then maybe from a sociological perspective, and then maybe in like individual experiments, I've talked about that. I experiment on myself all the time, especially with my health. Because I haven't been able to trust anyone or anything over the last 40 years that all used me as a guinea pig pincushion. But there are a lot of people out there like me that do the same thing. And so I take it from a gamut of sources. And when I start finding that the official narrative seems to be a bunch of loaded bullshit, and all they're trying to do is to make their bazillions of dollars because, wow, look at everyone who's invested. And right in the last 12th hour, good old Billy Gates comes in with his billions of dollars and buys up one of these vaccine companies. You know something stinky and rotten on the roadside in the hot sun, all right? So peer pressure is what is convincing all of these trendies. I mean, what was it in the early 2000s? Everyone jumped on board and got a tattoo. Now it's trendy to be transsexual or decide that you have a girlfriend. You know, let's dress up as a girl. I mean, do you really think? And I mean, it's possible our genes are that fucked up that we don't have any type of gender identity left anymore. But I think it's a lot more than being fucked up genomically. I think it's trendy. I think it's trendy. So let's make it trendy for everyone. Jump on board so we can be cool. I always wanted to be one of the cool kids. I tried. I was on the honor roll in advanced English and math, and I hung out with all the partiers. But guess what? When I was hanging out with the partiers, sitting around a bonfire on the beach, I had my social studies homework with me, or I was doing my math homework under the light of a bonfire while drinking a beer. I tried to live both worlds. All right, anyway, back to the end of Brandon's story. So don't be cool. Don't do what the cool kids did. Don't be a lemming. I remember that is what my orchestra instructor always taught us. Everyone's a lemming, and if you're a lemming, you follow them all right off the cliff. And remember, the bigger agenda behind all of this is human 2.0. I want to be human 1.0. Thank you very much. Anyway, so the end of this, if enough people read the propaganda and believe it, particularly if they think that a majority of others believe it, The victim population will become part of the propaganda. Now, apparently the New York Times and its ilk will also be sharing scary pictures to go along with their tripe. Of course, we all know what happened the last time the New York Times posted scary pictures and emotional words. Maybe one day we will finally leave Iraq. Dun, dun, dun. Great article, Brandon. This is posted up on Activist Post yesterday, and it's also on BrandonTurbeville.com. To go along with this, and you got to hold on one second with me, guys, because... they're all of a sudden, hey, one of the things I want to talk about too, I don't know if anyone has noticed. Hold on, let me search here. Drug pusher. If anyone has noticed, all of a sudden, Firefox has decided that it's going to tell me that my Flash is out of date. And it plays about 30 seconds of a video, and then it just crashes it. So you have to go use something like IE to even make it work. But something else I noticed, Chrome, as of the last few days, it started happening yesterday, but I noticed it again this morning. If you try to go to a website that doesn't have HTTPS, which is an encryption, S is SSL, and so they encrypt your URL and any data that's going across. We've talked about encryption before, endpoint to endpoint. But a lot of websites are just HTTP. But Chrome has started blocking websites now that are not HTTPS. And they give you some warning message about it not being safe. And then you have to click down in the little text that says advanced to get the whole description that says, well, you can still go to this website if you want to. But you got to go way down here, click advanced, and then click here. So, you know, we were talking about Google's truth algorithm. It looks like that Google Chrome is also in on the game. It's going to scare people, use fear people. Remember, make them think that anyone who's not using HTTPS must be a hacker. And if you go to that website, you're going to be compromised. So don't go here. It is information that you might want to know. I mean, what a load of bullshit. Anyway, I want to play yesterday. Talking about vaccines, I talked about an interview that April Lemberstein had done on Truth or Talk with the confessions of an RX drug pusher. I couldn't remember her name, and I always forget it. I'm sorry. Gwen Olson is her name, and there's a five-minute clip here of Gwen Olson talking about the pharmaceutical companies and how they don't give two shits about you at all. It's cheaper for them to pay off if they happen to get caught with their hand in the cookie jar and feeding you some poison. They are not liable. And if they are found to be liable, it's cheaper for them just to pay you off, to shut you up, decide what a human life and what your child's life was worth, and to move on rather than to do proper testing. Hopefully this will sound okay. I'm trying to do things in a hacked fashion. Let's see. Let's see if we can make it play. I'm going to crank it up. Come on, baby. This has been unbelievable. All right, Gwen Olson, Confessions of an RX Drug Pusher.
There's no such thing as a safe drug. By the time a drug's approved and it hits the general population, we don't know even 50% of the side effects that are involved with that drug. We were being trained to misinform people. I spent 15 years in the pharmaceutical industry working for some of the major manufacturers. It wasn't like I woke up one morning and said, you know, I need to get out of pharmaceutical sales. It was actually an awakening process for me. It was a spiritual and consciousness process where, as I started observing what was happening, what some of the drugs were doing, the misinformation, the disinformation, that I was being encouraged to minimize side effects when I talked to doctors, I started to recognize that these patients were literally being tortured by the drugs that they were given. My niece was 20 years old. She was attending Indiana University, and she was a pre-med student, extremely intelligent, beautiful woman, and just a beautiful spirit inside and out. She was in a car accident and was prescribed Vicodin, hydrocodone, for pain, and became addicted. while she was studying, she determined that the sedative properties of her drugs were keeping her from being able to concentrate. So she purchased some ephedra, which is a stimulant. She had a drug interaction and ended up in the emergency room at the local hospital. And they tagged her with a bipolar illness diagnosis, not a drug toxicity or, reaction to the drugs that she was on. And they started giving her more major antipsychotics and mood stabilizers. And that set her on the road to becoming a mental patient. She eventually had to drop out of school after a five-month period of trying to withdraw from Effexor and all of the other antipsychotics and drugs that they had put her on. She was extremely severely depressed, and her mom was on her way home to take her forcibly back to the psychiatrist and get her placed back on drugs. My niece walked into her younger sister's room and took an angel-shaped lantern that was filled with oil and poured it over herself and ignited it, and she burned herself alive.
Oh my God, this poor girl. I don't know how well you guys can hear that, but after she had had that accident and they put her on hydrocodone, and then she started taking ephedrine because she was a med student, and then it put her in the hospital, and then they declared that she had bipolar disorder and then put her on some more drugs and sent her to a psychiatrist, and then she tried to get herself out of them. Her mother got her back on them. She burned herself to death. I mean, how horrible is this? And this is Gwen Olson's niece that this happened to. And that's the way they do it. Once they get you on something, you are forever now the guinea pig, and they will just keep tying you in to their awful system.
Promise that I made to her that I would not let her memory be sullied, that I would tell people what in fact had happened to her, and that she would not be remembered mentally or genetically defective person, that I would not allow that to happen. And I realized that there are thousands and thousands of those people out there, and they need a voice, and I'm serving as that voice.
Now, how's this for a very scary number? In the last 10 years, the use of antipsychotic young children and teenagers has increased more than 500%.
500% of antipsychotic drug use on children. Guys, none of this is in our best interest. It is all about trying to suck us into the machine. Now, I want to change gears here a little bit because I'm already halfway through the show and there's a whole bunch of other stuff that I want to get to. But I don't know if you guys saw this. And I mean, talk about like bad marketing, but I guess maybe they think it's going to work well. Did you guys see, as we have this now DARK Act that just passed through the House a couple days ago, and we had the Congress get rid of the country of origin labeling laws for meats just recently as well. They are working on removing any type of mandatory labeling laws for GMOs. And of course, we know all of the dangers that GMOs can cause, the poisoning. I mean, I can spend weeks on end. It happened yesterday at dinner. I just start ranting and don't even get me started on that. But did you see now, as we're having these shortages across the board and all these, oh my God, never before seen plagues and outbreaks killing not only people, but sea life and chickens and egg shortages and who the hell knows what else? We have the pigs with the diarrhea disease. Well, hey, they got a solution for you. It's called Soylent 2.0. It's the brand new liquid meal replacement. Check this shit out.
You never needed to worry about food again. Well, that's the promise of a company called Soylent.
You may never need to worry about food again. Yes, good old Soylent is going to come out and save you.
Today it begins selling what it calls complete meals ready to drink in a bottle.
Oh.
The ingredients include powdered oils, rice protein, and vitamins. First on CBS This Morning, Ben Tracy takes us inside what could be the future of food.
Oh, yeah.
This little piece of gum is a three-course dinner.
When Willy Wonka created a three-course meal chewing gum,
it's tomato soup.
It did not turn out so well.
Violet, you're blowing up.
I feel funny.
Haha, they just showed Veruca Salt turning into a big, huge purple grape. And that's what's going to happen if you eat this You know, Charlie just said that it was rice protein. Now, I was out on Soylent's website, and they were showing that it was soy protein as well as algae. And maybe they have a couple different blends, but anything that's full of rice protein, caution, beep, 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 beep. Remember, who's a large rice producer and nobody wants to buy their food, and they've gone to the World Trade Organization to force places like South Korea to buy their shit, is Japan. And oh my God, what's happening in Japan? Yes, triple meltdown at least of Fukushima, and all their food is radioactive. I wouldn't be buying anything with rice in it. And I'm telling you, I mentioned it before, go to the grocery store, look at some rice, and try to figure out country of origin, because it does not exist.
But now a company called Soylent says it has found the formula to replace food as we know it. A ready-to-drink form. Rob Reinhart is Soylent's CEO.
You know, we're probably going to find out in the future, too, that once they move beyond the soy, and remember, we looked at this back a few weeks ago, 90% of all corn and all soy produced in the United States is GMO. 90%. And one of the dangers with soy is that it mimics estrogen. So you don't want to be drinking soy. You don't want your boys to be drinking soy, any of your children to be drinking soy. Between the GMOs and the estrogen mimickers, you know, that's danger, Will Robinson, right there.
What do you have against food?
Absolutely nothing. Quite the opposite. I love food. Oh, I love pizza. I love burritos, barbecue.
The 27-year-old engineer realized that while working long hours, he was also eating a lot of bad food and wasting a lot of time and money on it. He now drinks 80% of his daily calories.
Do you view this as meal replacement or as this meal supplement?
This is not something that's designed as a supplement to fill in the gaps of your diet. This is a full meal. It's going to give you everything your body needs.
Soylent is designed to provide a complete meal of essential vitamins, minerals, and healthy fat with zero cholesterol. Each serving is 400 calories and contains 20 grams of protein.
Yeah, it is bland. It's a little chalky.
Reinhart says he designed it that way so people could flavor it to their liking.
Can you make a version that tastes like a margarita?
Sure.
Some nutritionists have criticized Soylent, saying our bodies don't metabolize synthetic nutrients the same way we process food, and that Soylent does not deliver enough protein.
And synthetic nutrients. Yeah, just what you want to be eating, synthetic food. And anyone who's ever gone on a liquid diet, I mean, back probably 20 years ago, I went on my protein powders. I was having issues digesting meats for a long time. And so I started doing these protein powders and thought they were such a great thing. But if you don't eat solid food for a while, I'm going to tell you right now, your digestive system does not like it. And when you try to eat solid food again, you're looking at least a few weeks of utter pain as you're trying to kick your digestive system back into gear. This is not a good idea.
This does not substitute for regular food. Certainly can be used together with food, but in no way is it provide all of the things that you get from eating a diet of colorful fruits and vegetables and adequate protein.
Soylent says it has sold more than 6 million meals and has 50,000 customers, including Michael Hoopengarner.
I was often just finding myself very hungry in inopportune moments.
He says the meal in a glass comes in handy on the sets of the movies he makes.
We'll play this in the final edit.
And during late night editing sessions.
I drink Soylent every morning for breakfast, and then certainly if I find myself in a situation where I'm working late into the night, then I'll definitely drink it then.
If the name sounds familiar, you may remember this 1970s sci-fi film in which overpopulation made food scarce.
Yes, in which overpopulation made food scarce. Ding, 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 ding.
Island green is made out of people.
Reinhart hopes his product could eventually be a solution in overpopulated countries and feed the world's poor. Soylent currently costs $9 per day, but a Silicon Valley venture capital firm just invested $20 million in the company, and Reinhart thinks the product can get even cheaper.
I'd love to see who invested $20 million. I'll guarantee you it's someone somehow tied to Monsanto, the UN, or Mr. Bill Gates.
What we have to do is produce food more efficiently and distribute it wider, and we do that through technology, and that's what we're working on.
Yes, through technology.
He has plenty of time to work now that he doesn't have to worry about eating.
Yes, I don't have to worry about eating anymore.
CBS This Morning, Ben Tracy, Los Angeles.
Let me eat my synthetic Soylent 90% GMO soy protein. Hold on. Here we go. This is on Soylent.com. Modular ingredient design. Each ingredient plays a specific role in whole body nutrition. Soy protein, yes. A new soy protein isolate adds improved digestion, smoother texture, and a more robust amino acid profile. Algal oil, produced efficiently in bioreactors rather than traditional farms to conserve enormous quantities of natural resources while providing energy and essential fatty acids. Isomaltulose, a slow-metabolizing disaccharide naturally found in honey that offers sustained energy without the spikes of refined sugar, and, hey, vitamins and minerals. Each bottle of Soylent 2.0 is designed to include one-fifth of all essential micronutrients. And, you know, there's no real detail given about anything on this page. I would love to know a little bit more about exactly what is going into Soylent. All right. So, in the last 20 minutes of the show, where are we going to continue? I think I want to get over to a little bit of cybersecurity. Now, we've been seeing, I was talking about all the technical problems that I've been having, and all of a sudden, now Google Chrome is blocking websites, is unsecure because they're not HTTPS, nothing to do with bad certificates or funky reroutes or anything like that, just that I don't have HTTPS enabled on my site. Well, listen to this. This was from April 1st, 2015. This went through without much fanfare, and most people missed it. Obama's emergency cyber sanctions, another salvo in the war on legitimate hackers. Unconvinced by President Obama's and the government's promises to protect security researchers, professional hackers have expressed concern that the cyber sanctions announced today by the U.S. administration could perversely be used to punish those trying to protect the country. And these are the white hat hackers that are crying foul because they are going after everyone. They are also not sure about the need to call a quote-unquote national emergency as a result of the digital attacks on the nation. Like I said the other day, before 2 years ago, I mean, we had hacks and cracks. There have always been hacks and cracks. But here's the thing. It was not a massive, global, organized attack on high-profile targets like we've had over the last 2 years. Hitting the Pentagon, hitting the administration office of the federal government, hitting JP Morgan Chase, hitting the large healthcare insurance companies, hitting Sony. If you remember, Sony was the first big one. Oh my God, it must have been North Korea. Oh, it was China. Oh, it was Russia. Oh my God, it was anonymous. Guys, it isn't any of those people. I will guarantee you, we did a whole bunch of shows on Keith Alexander, the former head of the NSA, and he was in charge of creating the six different cyber patrols within the military. Remember, we also discovered that Microsoft has their own cyber patrol center now. And we read the other day, remember, there's no free lunch, people. We read the other day, Windows 10 being given away free to everyone. Oh, yes, take it, take it. It's going to be so wonderful, so awesome. You can use it. Oh, it's beautiful. And if you read one of their major privacy statements, it says that they have access to everything on your machine, your private emails, your private files. They can scan through them. And if they find anything that they think that should be referenced or handed over to law enforcement, if they find anything that might have to do with breaking of their copyrights, they have full rights to it. All right, back to the story. The president said in a Medium post describing the new executive order. Remember, we just had an executive order building supercomputers for national security. But back in April, like I said, without much fanfare, we had a new executive order about cybersecurity that reeled in the corporations with the federal government to quote-unquote protect our infrastructure. Well, back when the original privacy lawsuit happened against AT&T back in the mid-2000s, AT&T had handed over some records, and people were crying foul because AT&T should have been protecting your privacy, end user, not handing them over to the government. Well, they got rid of all that now, just like the vaccine industry, where they inked that legislation that if they fast-track something under the state of national emergency, and then you die from the vaccine that they fast-tracked without testing it, guess what? It's okay, because it was done in the name of national security, and the vaccine manufacturers have a limited liability, if any at all, for your death, or your child's death, or your permanent injury. Well, pretty much they've done the same thing now for all the corporations involved in cyber patrol. As the president said in a Medium post describing the new executive order that, quote, he wanted to stop the worst of the worst attacking America and its businesses online, pointing, of course, to the scary picture of North Korea's breach of Sony, as well as the Chinese and the Russian cyber criminals. Ding, 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 ding. They're the scary pictures. I'm surprised that we haven't seen propaganda pictures of the hackers in dark. We did actually that one video where he had the hoodie on. That was that hacking team out of Italy that our government is working with to hack every single one of our machines and put spying software on it. Anyway, back to the story. Anyone believed to pose significant threats to the U.S.'s security or economy by damaging critical infrastructure, disrupting or hijacking computer networks, or stealing trade secrets of U.S. firms or personal information of American citizens will, for profit, will have their assets frozen. Yes, and guess what? When we're all in a cashless society where we're using biometrics to get onto the internet and there's no anonymity and your bank accounts are tied to your iris scan and all you have are qubits, not dollars, because physical money has been outlawed, all they have to do to freeze your assets, and I mean they could do that right now, freeze your bank account, but they could just freeze your qubits or whoops! Guess what? There's no qubits in that account. We don't have any record of the 10,000 you used to have. There's none in there now. I don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Hacker. And actually, with smart homes, think about it. So your car won't work anymore because it recognizes you as a hacker, self-driving Google car. Your front door won't open because, hey, you need to put your thumb into your thumbprint door opening tool. Anyway, since they have their assets frozen, whilst the U.S. will withhold the right to issue sanctions against them, such sanctions cutting off access to America's finance system, and this is against Russia, China, and North Korea, but follow the future line, because it'll be against you and me. We're insurgents, remember, because we speak the truth. Could be imposed on those companies and public organizations who benefit from data stolen from the U.S., even if they didn't steal the information. And yes, that's like if they think that you gave a donation to some organization that then used that money to give to some other organization that then they deem to be quote-unquote terrorists, you could be considered an accessory to the terror. Obama said the powers would not be used to target the legitimate cybersecurity research community or professionals who help companies improve their cybersecurity. No, you will be brought right into the fold. And unlike some other countries, we will never try to silence, this is what he says, free expression online or curb internet freedom. Well, I say bullshit to oh, no, I muted. I want to pull up this executive order. I don't know how long I've been muted for, so I hope I wasn't muted for a long time. I think my arm just hit the mute button, hopefully. All right. Maybe the story will load. Whitehouse.gov does not want to load for me. If not, I might have to play a video that I have queued up here. Hurry it up. Here we go. April 1st, 2015, Whitehouse.gov executive order blocking the property of certain persons engaged in significant malicious cyber-enabled activities. Let's read. Blocking the property of certain persons engaging in significant malicious cyber-enabled activities by the authority vested in me as the president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the National Emergencies Act, and he gives all the sections 2012F or 212F of the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1952 and Section 301 of Title III U.S. State Code. I, Barack Obama, President of the United States of America, find that the increasing prevalence and severity of malicious cyber-enabled activities originating from or directed by persons located in whole or in substantial part outside the United States constitute an unusual and an extraordinary threat to what? Yes, national security, foreign policy, and the economics of the United States. I hereby declare a national emergency to deal with this threat. Ding, 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 ding. Cybersecurity has become a national emergency. Remember, the FCC took over the internet just a few simple months ago, and now the internet is under national emergency. But don't worry. Oh, please don't worry. Because we have Microsoft to the rescue.
Every year, criminals are getting more sophisticated in figuring out how to exploit the internet for purposes of doing harm to others.
These guys are really sophisticated. They're technology oriented.
It's everything from malicious code and computer viruses to child pornography and human trafficking to software counterfeiting, internet piracy, advertising fraud, click fraud.
Anything you can think of that makes money, these guys are involved.
It's a lot of different sorts of sinister activities that victimize people all over the world.
And what's so great is that Microsoft came out with this in June of 2014. On November 14th of 2013, so that was the video, was June of 2014, but on November 14th of 2013, Microsoft announced the opening of their Microsoft Cyber Crime Center. It says a center of excellence for advancing the global fight against cybercrime. I'm sorry, but in 2013, nobody even really knew what cybercrime was. Like I said, we had a few little hacky attacks here and there, but when Sony Pictures got hacked, oh my God, by 1950s technology, North Korea, holy shit, it was a national emergency, and we had to enable who? Yes, Bill Gates is back at the helm, helping part-time in Microsoft, and he is now getting his payback for bending over and spreading them during that antitrust lawsuit in the early 2000s when he handed them the keys.
Cybercrime is truly global crime, the transnational crime in nature. That is different from what used to be.
There's no set boundary for where they might come from, and there's no set boundary for where they might attack. A lot of it is target of opportunity, wherever they can find a toehold, especially if it's financially motivated.
The techniques of the adversaries keep getting more sophisticated. It doesn't cost much to attack. It costs a lot to defend.
And what's just so amazing is, again, this is the scary picture that they're painting. Oh, let's be afraid, be very afraid. There's hackers under every fucking bed. And like I said, it's getting crowded, so now they've spread to the closet as well. And don't forget that your teenager is going to be self-radicalized over the internet because it's such a danger.
Given the migration of so much of our important work, our personal information to the cloud, you have to have a level of commitment by a company like Microsoft to protect computer users.
Protect you.
The Cybercrime Center is one tangible example of our commitment.
I think that we are at a critical moment in time. In part, it's because the problem is getting worse. Now, at the same time,
Our technology is getting much more sophisticated, and it was clear this was the time to make sure that we harness the power of that technology so that we have the most powerful ability in the world to fight crime on the internet.
Of course.
Well, the Cybercrime Center is a place, a global headquarters for our worldwide digital crimes unit that is fighting cybercrime around the world. It's a place where our most talented lawyers, intelligence specialists, investigators work together here with law enforcement and industry partners to combat cybercrime and investigate real cybercrime cases every minute of every day.
Yes.
That includes mapping capabilities. It includes malware detection capabilities, all sorts of cutting-edge forensic techniques that allow us to detect, monitor, and investigate cyber criminals.
And it's unbelievable. They have lawyers. They have cyber crime experts. They have international law enforcement. They have maps. They track IP addresses. God, we could do anything. It sounds a hell of a lot like some of the technologies that DARPA is working on, and I will guarantee you that somewhere along the way, Microsoft and DARPA are hooked up and linked up, working in conjunction.
No national, no international, the regional organizations can fight against cybercrime alone. We need global alliance.
Where there are bad guys in one country doing damage in another country, our ability to have a global footprint and be able to interact with law enforcement in all these different countries is essential.
It's vital that we have a set of relationships where people can come in and work together and not work at the speed of government or even at the speed of business, but at the speed of cyber.
And the thing is, I mean, look at how this just plays so well into this whole coming global government. That's exactly what they said. They're like, it's not, you know, localized to any one country. It's global. We have to all come together. Good old, I'm telling you, Bill Gates, man, we always thought that he was the coming and he brought it all together, but Bill Gates sure brought it all together to now stick it right up your backside.
If you worked alone, what you would see is these complex networks. You would take down one site and another one would pop up. So essentially it becomes a game of whack-a-mole. Instead of doing that, we're able to work with Microsoft to make really lasting, impactful change by taking down things on a much larger scale because they have the visibility and the expertise to do that.
Ultimately, though, everybody's vulnerable.
I think it's very exciting, this development of this Microsoft Cybercrime Center, with the technology, having it being 24/7.
Yes.
I think that's the type of response that we need as a society.
Cyber defense is a team sport, and everybody has to be involved.
Yes, cyber defense is a team sport, and everyone has to be involved. Like, just, I can't even get over. And so Microsoft decides that it's a team sport. DARPA decides it's a team sport. Everybody's spying on everybody, and now we have an executive order.
We have to work together. So it has to be a private sector. It has to be a public sector. It has to be international.
To clearly name specific unit in Microsoft as Cybercrime Center, it's an obvious sign to law enforcement that Microsoft is serious about cybercrime, that Microsoft is serious to work with law enforcement.
When there is a criminal anywhere in the world who's trying to separate an elderly person from their money, trying
yes.
to defraud somebody, trying to steal their personal information, we have a better capability to connect the dots, follow the leads, work with law enforcement, and ultimately prove to that criminal that this is not a way for them to make money.
Innovation is the heart of Microsoft as a company, but it's not just in how we make products, it's how we fight crime.
Yeah.
This place is the epicenter of our commitment to innovation in fighting crime.
Big data.
It helps ensure that our customers get the benefit of all of this expertise, that they have a safer and reliable computing environment. It also enables us to do something for the world as a whole, we hope, in terms of ensuring that everybody, no matter what kind of computing device they're using, can do so with more confidence.
Yes, because we are going to keep you safe. All right, this is how we're going to end up the show. So there was a story that I saw just recently, Google and Microsoft helping the White House to track what? Oh, climate change. Obama just did some new executive order saying how he's going to get behind it all. And we have all these new carbon laws. We're going to have to cut carbon and pollution because, goddammit, people, you are the reason that the world is going to hell and the reason why the food is drying up and we have all this crazy weather and so we're going to do it. All right. Well, the White House has announced that it is teaming up with Google and Microsoft to centralize its climate change data and to make it more accessible for the public and researchers alike. The data.gov website's new climate portal is one of the results of President Obama's climate data initiative and will be powered in part by teams at Mountain View and Redmond. And while the raw data will continue to come from the likes of the Department of Defense, NASA and the U.S. Geological Society, Google and Microsoft and others will massage it and present it. Isn't that great? NASA's involved again, just like they are with Verizon and Amazon's drones. They're going to become the air traffic control center for all that. This is just so freaking amazing. But to add insult to injury, yes, Billy Gates, the story came out yesterday. Bill Gates is doubling down on clean energy with, yes, a $2 billion, with a B, $2 billion personal investment. Follow the money, people. Bill Gates is no stranger to progressive thinking. The philanthropic foundation he runs with his wife, Melinda, has backed everything from the long-lasting pill-based contraception. Yes, we talked about that, the forever pill, to a process whereby human waste can be converted into safe drinkable water. We talked about that one too. He was drinking poop water. Most of their efforts are focused on improving conditions for the world's poor and markets often neglected by the private sector, corporations, and government aid. Yes, so Bill Gates to the rescue. And it is a safeguard to the ongoing work of Bill and Melinda Gates that Bill Gates has announced that he will be doubling his personal investment in clean energy technology over the next 5 years, taking his total stake to a whopping $2 billion in renewable energy production and research. Gates argues, and there we go, the time is right, and we will see major advances in technology. All right, guys, it's Thursday. Make sure you stick around.